There are many stories that need to be told about Canada's residential schools. And one of the stories comes from people who worked in the schools. It's considered to be a story that's not told enough. Nancy Dyson was hired as a child care worker in 1970 at what used to be called St. Michael's Indian Residential School. And she's on the line with us this morning. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me to speak.
Now, you have just written this book about your experiences, you and your husband, Dan, a book that you've been working on for a while that just happened to come out when Canada had sort of a collective reconnection to the story. Tell us about your experiences at the beginning. You're an American and you came to Canada, and Canada was supposed to be this great, wonderful country.
That's right. We'd crossed the country by train. We had flexible tickets. We could take our bikes and our backpacks and our little pup tent and get on and off and on and off. And Canadians were so friendly. You know, we were invited to sell Amway products. We were invited to people's homes.
Wow, right.
And we hadn't experienced that for a long time in the States because of the Vietnam War. There was such polarization, and older people generally didn't like younger people and vice versa. So we thought, wow, we have arrived in this magical land. Let's stay here a while.
Yes. And then you got a job working as a child care worker in this Indian residential school, and you had no idea the history. You didn't know what it was, but what was your first day at work like?
Well, the very first day, the matron, who was like the headmaster for the girls' division, she led us to a sub-basement, and she said, we start here, and we waited a few minutes, and an Indian agent brought in four children. Two little girls and two little boys, and they were, you know, they just were standing, trembling, looking down, and the matron took some heavy scissors, heavy shears, and cut away the children's hair and their clothes, and then she gathered up the hair and the clothing and threw it into this blazing firebox in a big boiler, and there was this big whoosh, and the children were just terrified. Mm-hmm. We were terrified, too, and Dan said, is this necessary? And the matron just said, very matter-of-factly, lice. They all come in with lice. And that was very typical. The children weren't treated as little human beings. They were just things to be managed.
Mm-hmm. Nancy,
and, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, just I think at that moment, I wanted to quit. I just wanted to get out of there.
You didn't have any experience with kids before you ended up at this school. Wouldn't that have been one of the first clues that you got hired on and you had absolutely no experience? Was that like, were you taken a bit aback that here I have this job and I have zero experience with children?
Well, yes. So we learned that it was pretty hard to staff schools. They were in remote places. Salaries were relatively low, even though the federal government had taken over the residential schools in 1969. So salaries were higher than they had been when they were church-run. They were still low, and it was a remote community. Not everybody wanted to do it. But we should have known. We were flown up there. We were interviewed, hired on the spot. And then we talked with other staff who also did not have experience.
Right.
Yeah.
The kids in the school, where did they come from?
Well, originally, you know, residential schools, I gather, were set up to serve, to provide education for children from remote areas. But we were surprised once we landed in the school to learn that over half the kids were from the island, Cormoran Island, where Alert Bay was situated, a little island 5 miles long and 3 miles wide. And by the 1960s, over 60% of the children in residential schools across Canada were there for social welfare reasons. Families were deemed unfit and children were taken away. There weren't the intermediate steps that you would see in non-Indigenous families, where families would be offered support, and education, parenting programs. No, the children were simply removed.
Well, and that's one of the things comments that you make in the book is because this had gone on for so many generations, is parents had lost the ability to learn how to be a parent.
Yes. Our good friend Robert Joseph, who founded Reconciliation Canada, told us that he left the residential school and he was just a broken individual, and he fell into alcoholism and addictions, and it took him a long time to heal and then to reach out and heal others in his family. And I've had the pleasure of meeting some of his children, and they say it's intergenerational. They're still all working on learning to love and nurture and care and trust.
It's the Live 85 Morning Startup. We are talking to Nancy Dyson. She's a co-author, along with her husband, Dan, of the book St. Michael's Residential School, Lament and Legacy. The way this book opens, when you get out to remote British Columbia, has the pacing and feel of a horror movie. And I say that because you keep meeting people, or you introduce people very quickly. There's an RCMP officer, and everybody seems to know what's going on, but nobody's telling anybody anything. You know, oh, you're working at St. Michael's. Oh, well, good luck. Oh, I can't talk to you about this. And then you literally begin the book. You know, you say in your first date, you go to the basement, you know, the place you're never supposed to go in a horror movie. And it really gives you chills. Like, it's really quite terrifying.
That's an interesting analogy.
Do you think back on it and go, you know, the clues were there, and it really is quite spine tingling.
Well, yes, the clues were there, and it was a very emotional experience to write the book, to recall the memories, and we ask ourselves, and others have asked us, why were you silent for so long? Mm-hmm. And it's a valid and important question. And I think part of it was we didn't know what to do. While we were at the school, we joined a community effort. We circulated a petition asking the federal government to come to Alert Bay and see firsthand what was happening. Mm-hmm. And a delegation arrived. And the first day they spent with the administrator, being wined and dined in his apartment. The second day they asked to meet with staff without the administrator being present. And the senior official asked whether there were any concerns. And the other staff were silent. But my husband, Dan, pulled a piece of paper out of his pocket, and he read a really long list of concerns that we had compiled with others in the community, especially the Indigenous community. And the headmaster for the boys was really angry, and he interrupted, and he said, you know, Dan and Nancy shouldn't even be allowed to speak. They're not Canadians. They're not Christians. They've only been here 4 months. And Dan said, only 4 months, but we know what's going on here. It's called cultural genocide.
Wow.
And Dan's mother was an art historian, a social activist, and she had written to a family friend, Morris Opler, who was studying the effect of residential schools on the Apache people in the Southwest in the U.S., and he introduced us to that current term, cultural genocide. So the next day, Dan was fired, and we left the school, left the island. And I think that there are times in our lives where we find ourselves in a malevolent environment where we know there's evil. And how do we respond? My response was to run away. I wanted to quit immediately and leave. Dan was like, no, let's stay a little while and see if we can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And we did try. And I don't think we had any impact, even though the delegation came from Ottawa. The school was closed in 1974, and we were very relieved. From 1970 to onward, the federal government was dismantling residential schools, so we thought, okay, this is good. That problem is kind of being taken care of. And it really wasn't until the TRC reports were tabled here in Ottawa that we realized that the trauma...
Right.
of the residential schools was far from over, and it will be years and years before it is over, if ever.
Nancy, there's a lot there, and certainly a lot to talk about. The book is called St. Michael's Indian Residential Schools. It is in bookstores in Ottawa at the moment, but I got to say, it's hard to find.
We notified our publisher that it was hard to find, and they said yes, and we need to. They put in an urgent request, and the printer printed 500 more copies a week ago Friday. The book should be arriving on bookshelves and online as well.
And Nancy, I guess before we let you go, so how are you feeling at the moment?
Well, Dan and I are delighted that people are interested and people want to start conversations about what happened. Prior to this, I think a lot of people did not want to talk about it. People were pretty frank and saying, you know, that happened in the past. Let's not judge people in the past with today's standards or views. People are engaging in conversations, and I think that's how change and healing will actually occur. So I am delighted by that. The the intensity of the requests for interviews and things has, that's been an interesting experience, and we're grateful that people are interested in listening.
The book is called St. Michael's Residential School, Lament and Legacy. Co-author Nancy Dyson joined us this morning. Thanks so much, Nancy.
Thank you for having me on. Bye-bye.